Yeah, it's a double-edged sword, right? Because this is my this is my problem with yoga, right? It's a double-edged sword because there's 1,001 positive elements to yoga, but at the same time, how far does it take you and how far does it get you? And so we've got to balance things out. If you only do yoga and you don't do anything else, I can't imagine the quality of a person's life is going to improve that much. I imagine they're going to find it very difficult in the modern world, in the modern environment. Like sitting cross-legged and doing meditation is fine if you live in the rural areas of India and you've got a lot of time on your hands and the weather is nice, right? Yeah, you'd probably die if you tried that in winter in the north of Scotland, right? So, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. If it doesn't kill you, and we have to realize that climate, environment, habitat affects habit. Yeah. So, what we have around about us basically programs us. So that's why in my last flat I had motivational quotes in all the walls in all the rooms, so that wherever you go there was something motivational to see. Habitat affects habit. The things you have around about you are extremely important. And working in schools with kids in a classroom, it's like organizing the chairs and the tables and the walls, and things have to be colorful and neat and tidy. And the thing is that life is not one chair in a room, though. So, whether or not that can be applied practically in the real world is another question. Because walking through life, there's variety and distraction at in all places. There's not one place. There's not one place that is not constantly affected by a lot of things going on around about it in the modern world. So, it's like bringing a group of people into a room to do yoga or meditation, and then it works for 30 minutes, but then they have to go back outside the room and return to the real world. And in general, I think yoga and meditation are good activities, but at the same time, I fear that people just use it to escape from a reality that they're not very comfortable with. So, my point of view is, they're living a sort of 90-10 lifestyle where 90% is stress and 10% is like trying to relax from the 90%. And I think that life would be better served having it the other way around, where like 90% of the time they were relaxed and 10% of the time they went through that those stressful activities. I think it would be better the other way. Of course, it's much easier to say than it is to do, but it's interesting to realize. I was talking last week with a client about how a lot of things are backwards. Like people use holidays to escape from reality, rather than living within the principle of feeling like you're on a holiday. Because you work really hard in something you do. For a lot of people, they work really hard in something they don't like to make enough money to escape from what they don't like for a short period of time to come back to what they don't like to work really hard at. Why don't you just work less hard and then you'll have to
Enjoy.
spend and enjoy what you're doing and not worry about making enough money to go on that holiday to escape from where you are. Nothing wrong with holidays. To see the world, travel, do things, absolutely. But not everybody is living life that way. Or the other example is that people are working to pay for, a lot of people are working to pay for predominantly two things that
House.
they can't, yeah. Where if you're at work, you can't be at home, right?
No.
So you're working, you're going away from what you have to work at something to have something that you can't use. But you need it, but we need we but we need it, but we have to think about it carefully. We have to think about it carefully. Yeah. And it's the same, like how many people are working to pay off the car that they need to get to their work, right? And that's another interest, because it's like, yeah, I need the car for my freedom, and I need to travel, and I need it for everything that I do in the modern world. And it's like, yeah, but look at your percentages, look at how it's organized. Yeah, see what and where and how much. And a lot of things are, people invest in what they want, invest in what makes you happy, whatever. But a car is a losing investment. Keeping money in a bank is a losing investment. So like the moment you buy a car, if you buy a new car, it drops its price by 15 to 25% instantly. That's not really viable. I think the future is in leasing. I recommend that everybody leases, because it's,
Somebody has to own them.
yeah, but that's the company's prerogative. Then they have the power there. Ownership is, you own you, nothing more, nothing less, right? You own you, and you owe you. Nothing more, nothing less. That's it. And so when you say someone has to own the car, it's like it doesn't matter if you own the car, your friend owns the car, your boss owns the car, your family owns the car, your partner owns the car, your grandmother owns the car, your kids. What, it doesn't matter who owns. Like nobody cares, right? Nobody cares who owns the car. So, and the print. Businesses understand the principle of leasing, right? It's not that you have the car, it's that you have to maintain the car and take care of the expenses of the car, and then find the right car to buy, and then try to sell it once you've, at the end, and lose money on selling it, and it's going to break down at some point in time. You're going to have to take care of it. You might miss time at work because you have to take it to the garage, and all these other elements. And so I think from the perspective of time, that it's always worth leasing, because somebody else is taking care of all that stuff. That's what we want. We want. In general, the average person, now if you're a car fanatic and you like cars and you want to play with them and rebuild them and it's your hobby and things, that's different, but that's not the average person. And so and I think everybody's going to do everything like that in the future. I think it's all going to be leasing, because look what happens with objects. We just collect and collect and collect until we have so much stuff in life that we don't know what to do with it all, and it happens to every single person in the world. We still live in a mindset of scarcity, where we have like the mindset of our grandparents who had to fight wars, and they didn't have fruit. And
Much.
yeah, well, the truth is that if you want to pick up something, you have to put something down first. So we can't carry everything with us all of the time. So in order to pick up new things, we have to put down old things in general. There's not enough energy that we have to carry everything with us all of the time. And so that's true with objects. And I think people will lease their homes. I think people will lease furniture. It's like every 10 years people have to change what's in their home because it's old and outdated and used and worn and torn. Imagine there's a company that says, okay, we're going to give you can choose whatever furniture you want from this catalog for your home, and we'll deliver it to you, and you know, we'll put it in the rooms, and and you pay us every month. But after 3 years, what we do is we come and we take all the furniture away, and we give you a new catalog, and you can choose all new furniture, right? Who's not going to say no to that? Hmm. Most people are going to say, wow, thank you for taking care of this problem for me, because we all. That's one less thing to worry about in life, because somebody else is going to come and take care of it, and that's the reason why businesses essentially function or exist, to smooth the process of the so-called development of society. So I think businesses understand that's what happens with cars, and I think it's going to happen with almost everything in the future. Because it removes a whole series of time-consuming problems, allowing human beings to be more creative and more thoughtful about what it is that they do. And almost everything will become like that. You know, what do you do with the house when the old people die or whatever? You know, these problems should be solved long before that point in time. And I think that will create another set of problems, because people love to own things and private ownership is very popular, and I like to own things as well. But then again, we have to learn to let go. Right. It's not what you have; it's how you use it. Right. Mm-hmm. It's not that it's important to own the house. It's that property is an investment, and it's generally better to have your money invested in property than it is sitting in the bank. So, you know, that's the point. Now you got your own home, you got your own privacy, you've got your own security, and you know, the ability, and it's a big question, you know, the ability in Western society to have liberty, freedom, and you know, make as much money as you want to make is extremely important, because all these things were well understood in the past, from the principle that not everybody was allowed to vote.
Mm-hmm.
Because not everybody was responsible.
Mm-hmm.
Right. If you're sick, you go to your doctor, right?
Mm-hmm.
You got problems with money, you go to see an accountant or a financial advisor. You don't want your doctor to give you financial advice. You don't want your accountant to operate on you, right? Right. Problem with your car, you take it to a car mechanic. You know, you don't give it to the local chemist or, you know, hairdresser or something, right? So we understand these principles. We understand that some people have more experience and know better about certain things. Now, sometimes we make mistakes, but that's how we learn. So let's not worry about that too much, because that's all the process of progress. And in the past, not everybody was allowed to vote, because not everybody had experience of what it meant. People don't understand the difference between macro and microeconomics. People don't understand the allocation of resources. You know, what is the best way to allocate or reallocate resources? Most people have experience of one or two occupations that they have a good understanding of. There are very few what are called Renaissance men or Renaissance women, you know, the Leonardo da Vinci's, who seem to be good at everything. This is very rare to be like that. So so we understand that people have knowledge and expertise. And in the past, basically, if you owned property and were able to manage that property, then the experience of that gave you the right to make decisions about society. Now we live in a world where the homeless man's vote is equal to the university professors. And that is a very questionable way to run society, because how can you equate those two things? That they're in no way the same. You don't want the homeless man to decide how the university should be run, and you don't want the university professor to choose which tree to sleep under, right? I mean, I'm not saying either situation is good or bad. I'm just saying that there's a practicality to it. And so, personal perspective, I think that until we return to that, we're not going to get much progress, because everybody's going to be voting about things that they know nothing about, and that's just stupid, right? Because you're going to have your hairdresser fixing your car, you're going to have your car mechanic cutting your hair, and these people don't
I know.
understand society. They don't. And this idea, one person, one vote. I'm 44, and I've never really met anyone who understands how things work. The responsibility of ownership is key for the success of society. And what this means is that I think if you don't own something, you don't have a right to say what happens, because you don't have the responsibility. You don't have an understanding of responsibility. And I put this from the perspective of business, yeah? I think that if a person owns a business, or is a partner in a business, or is self-employed, running, working for themselves, they have a right to say what happens, because they have that key position in society. The same way that if you work in a school, you have a right to say what happens in the school. Right, but how do you have a right to say what happens in the hospital if you work in the school? I don't, that doesn't make much sense to me, right? So I think that, and pre-1900, that was how society was organized. And I think that there's an average that 8 out of 10 people don't understand how most things work. So we've got 80% of society not understanding how society works. The large majority of people get to vote on something they know nothing about and influence the outcome. But that's suicide, right? And you wouldn't let people who know nothing about you make decisions for your life. So how can you let people who know nothing, I mean, people will have an opinion about what's right for you, because everyone's got an opinion, but not everybody knows you. So it's not going to work until we take a step back, because how is it even possible that a person who's 18, their vote is equal to a person who's 60? I mean, how is that even practical in the world? Because in history, we understood that the elders of society had knowledge and wisdom. Now we're rejecting the knowledge and wisdom. Like, most recently, everyone is prepared to reject 20, 30, 40 years of a scientist's work and replace it with a pencil written text of a 16-year-old girl. Right? Right? We're rejecting lifetimes of work by professionals who have dedicated 12 hours a day, almost every day, to studying every detail and nuance of a subject, and we're replacing that with the ideas of someone who knows basically nothing about how the world works. That's frightening. That's absolutely frightening. Now, it's not, I'm not, again, I'm not saying that one is right and one is wrong, but I'm saying
One is wrong.
there's practicality to it, right? I mean, do you want to Do you want to take nutritional advice from someone who spent their life, studying the fruit and the vegetables and the effects and everything of it, or do you just want to, get it from your neighbor? Right. Facts. The world is run by either facts or feelings. You either choose to follow the facts or you choose to follow the feelings. And it's much, much easier to go with the feeling than it is to go with the fact, because the fact requires study, it requires competence, it requires hard work, it requires diligence, it requires discernment, the ability to know what is true. It requires scientific method. It requires placing evidence over superstition. And all of those acts are complex things to do and take a lifetime. And anybody can be right at any point in time like that. But it takes a lifetime to understand that. Yeah, it takes a life. Like, I can learn stuff from my kids, right? But I'm still the one that tells my kids to brush their teeth, right? So I'm not, I probably learn more about myself from my children than I do from anyone else, and for that reason, I'm very grateful and I listen very carefully. Yet at the same time, I'm not going to take certain kinds of advice from them, right? Because they absolutely don't know something.
The bigger picture.
Definitely. Once we understand that we know nothing, life becomes so much more practical. And I'm not saying that because I'm saying we're all stupid. What I'm saying is that we all start to pay attention. Yeah. When you understand that 1% and there's 99% you don't know, and you're an intelligent person, you begin to pay more attention to things. Yeah, like when you arrive, you treat information like you're arriving in a new city. Everything is new. You're suddenly like, oh, I don't know any of these shops, I don't know any of these people, I don't know any of these buildings, I don't know any of these streets. And you then have to heighten your awareness and begin to understand, what are the right things to do, what are the wrong things to do. And people very often don't do that too much. And it's hard. It takes time. People want, people want problems that have developed over long periods of time. People want to solve instantly. It doesn't work like that. In general, in my experience in life, the amount of time that it takes to create or understand a problem is the amount of time it takes to solve the problem. Yeah. We're so used to this. Like, somebody goes out drinking all night, wakes up in the morning, feels shit, pops two paracetamol, goes off to work, feels fine, right? People want to treat their entire lives like that. Like it just makes the negative not exist. But the negative is what we need to understand, not what we need to ignore, because that's what we need to improve. Yeah. So that's why things like hate speech is ridiculous, because it's wrong because someone has an opinion. That's ridiculous. I mean, it's just an opinion. People are allowed to think. If you can't have an opinion, then you're not allowed to think. If you're not allowed to think, you can't grow. And so there's a domino effect. There's no such thing as sort of love speech and hate speech, or even sort of good speech and bad speech. There's just speech. The what is it Shakespeare said? There is no good at bad. There is no good or bad except that which we are told is so. Oh, it's some kind of paraphrase of Hamlet or something. Yeah. So, it's not totally true all the time, but it's just a word. It's just a word. It's accepted, rejected. It's just a word. It's just an opinion. People have the right to have an opinion. You can, oh, we have to ban these people because of what they say. It's why? Because they're effective? Because they're more people are listening to them? Because they're better than you? Well, that's something you need to learn from. So did this it, that, you can't say political correctness. Be
Different.
polite, be respectful, but don't hold back.
That brings us back to the ethics and the moral
Yeah,
people
the,
are.
yeah, and understanding that life is not a spectrum. It's a holistic circle. And this is very key to understand because people think of spectrums like, oh, it's good on one side and bad on the other. That's rubbish, right? Because what it is it's good until it's not good anymore. For this and for the same reason, it's bad until it's not bad anymore. And people want to say that it's so black and white, but like it's not so clear because the thing that is the right thing to do today might be the wrong thing to do tomorrow. The thing that is the right thing to say today might be the wrong thing to say tomorrow. And we might, what might be absolutely the best thing in the world today, might be the worst thing in the world tomorrow. The same way that, the fastest way to get somewhere was ride a horse, right? It's not true anymore. Yeah, so we've got to update ourselves to fit into the world around about us, understanding that. The growth of technology is fantastic until it's not fantastic anymore. And everything goes through that cycle. Everything goes through that cycle. We live until we die, right? I mean, everything goes through that cycle. Everything is the yin and yang, the two sides to it. So, and everything is like that. Everything is like that. It's why I mentioned, I think I mentioned the love and hate principle before. It's the same. You love until you don't love anymore, which is then a
More.
dislike or hate, but you realize that's just the other side of the same circle. That's just the other side of the same circle. And people don't want to see that it's a whole holistic sort of.
That's because you love and hate because you care,
Oh
because
yeah.
you do not ignore.
Yeah, you just people only hate things because they want things to be better. Right? They don't hate things because they want things to be worse. They hate things because they want things to be better because they've got this idea from their past, their experience that has taught them that something is right. Yeah, it's hard because there's that's religion in 5 seconds, right? That's the entire history of religion in 5 seconds. We're right, you're wrong because my parents told me so.